the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, Anna Mateo, and Jill Robbins. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dan Novak.
High temperature records are being broken across the Pacific Northwest as an extreme heat wave covers the area. Portland, Oregon reached 44.4 degrees Celsius Sunday. That broke the all-time temperature record of 42.2 degrees Celsius set just one day earlier. In Eugene, Oregon, it was so hot that U.S. track and field canceled Olympic trials Sunday afternoon. The National Weather Service, or NWS, said it hit 43.3 degrees Celsius in Eugene, breaking the all-time record of 42.2 degrees Celsius. Those who had come to watch were also asked to leave the stadium because of the heat. Oregon's capital city, Salem, also recorded the highest temperature in its history on Sunday, 44.4 degrees Celsius. That broke the old record by 2 degrees. The NWS has described the heat wave in the Pacific Northwest as dangerous, unusual, and intense. The area rarely sees temperatures climb this high. The extreme heat was caused by an extended heat dome over the Pacific Northwest. In Seattle, a city known for its rain, the temperature reached 40 degrees Celsius. The NWS said that was an all-time record. It was the first time temperatures were over 38 degrees Celsius for two straight days since records were first kept in 1894. There were also some power outages. Portland General Electric said about 3,000 customers were without electricity in the city area Sunday afternoon. Puget Sound Energy reported 3,400 customers without power in the Seattle area. Temperatures were expected to get even hotter across the region Monday before beginning to cool Tuesday. The heat wave stretched into British Columbia, Canada, which is just north of Washington State. In Lytton, British Columbia, temperatures hit 46.1 degrees Celsius. It was a new Canadian record. A heat warning is in effect for most of Western Canada. The country's weather agency says many daily temperature records have been broken across British Columbia. Seattle's King County closed several COVID-19 testing sites because of the heat. The Seattle Times reported that the city has opened additional public libraries to provide cooling centers. Sound Transit said that Seattle's light rail trains may have to run at slower speeds because of high heat on the tracks. The heat wave also moved into Idaho. temperatures there reached above 38 degrees Celsius. They are expected to continue for at least 7 days starting Monday. Cities were telling citizens where pools and cooling centers were available. Officials were also urging people to drink a lot of water and avoid physically tiring activities. Still, about 3,000 athletes took part in an Ironman triathlon in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, on Sunday. The event includes a 3.9-kilometer swim, a 180-kilometer bike ride, and a 42-kilometer run. The NWS in Coeur d'Alene said this week's weather will likely be one of the most extreme and prolonged heat waves in the recorded history of the inland Northwest. Race organizers said they had 28,000 kilograms of ice to keep the athletes cool, KHQ-TV reported. Stan Foster works in the Ironman medical area. "The biggest thing that we tell people is, number one, don't try to set a record on your race," he said. "Go slow. Enjoy your day. It's going to be hot." I'm Dan Novak.
A marriage of art and artificial intelligence, or AI, has made it possible to recreate missing parts from a famous painting in the National Museum of the Netherlands in Amsterdam. The painting is known as Night Watch by Rembrandt van Rijn. Parts of the painting were cut off 70 years after Rembrandt finished it in 1642. Rembrandt is considered one of the greatest artists of the Golden Age period in Dutch art and history. The recreated pieces have been put directly against the painting. The museum's edition brings back the off-center focal point Rembrandt first created. Museum director Taco Dibbets told the Associated Press, "It can breathe now." The two main subjects of the painting are Captain Frans Bonink Kok and Lieutenant Willem van Reitenberg, who were members of a civil militia. They are at the center of the painting after it was cut. The new computer-created additions move the two to the right. "It really gives the painting a different dynamic," Dibbets said. "And what it taught us is that Rembrandt never does what you expect." The museum always knew the uncut painting was bigger because there is a smaller copy painted by Gerrit Lundens. Researchers and art repair experts use the Lundens copy, computer technology, and detailed images of the painting to recreate the missing parts. The project took 2 years. Dibbets said they made a detailed photograph of the Night Watch by combining 528 digital pictures. Then, they taught a computer using AI technology what colors Rembrandt would have used and how he would have painted. The machine learning also permitted the museum to correct distortion from the painting's smaller copy. Lundens was sitting to one side of the painting when he made the copy. "There is a simple reason why Rembrandt's 1642 painting of an Amsterdam civil militia was cut. It was moved to the town hall and did not fit on a wall between two doors. It is a mystery what happened to the missing piece. The digital recreation that will be shown in the coming months is part of the research and repair project called Operation Nightwatch. It began 2 years ago, before the coronavirus health crisis caused museums to close for months. The museum is expected to welcome visitors, but will accept only half the normal number as the Netherlands eases COVID-19 restrictions. The painting last underwent major repairs more than 40 years ago after a man cut it with a knife. The painting also is starting to lose its color in some areas. Dibbitt said the reproduced editions are not meant to trick visitors into thinking the painting is bigger. It is to give them a clear idea of what it was supposed to look like. He said Rembrandt would have definitely done it more beautifully, but this comes very close. I'm Gregory Stockel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Health experts and world leaders have given this warning. It is not enough to vaccinate people in rich nations against the coronavirus. All countries must get enough vaccines to protect all their people. We've said all through this pandemic that we are not safe unless we are all safe, said John Nkengasong. He heads the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. At the start of the pandemic, many poor countries with weak healthcare systems appeared to have avoided major problems. But that is changing.
Concerns are growing in some of the world's poorest countries as coronavirus infections increase and new versions of the virus appear. There also have been shortages of vaccine in many countries. The crisis has shocked public health officials and millions of unvaccinated people. This is especially the case in countries where people live with only enough money to survive and pay for health emergencies themselves. The United Nations-supported program called COVAX aims to provide vaccines to poor countries. However, the program faces a serious shortage of vaccines. As a result, the U.S., Britain, and the other rich industrialized countries agreed to share at least 1 billion vaccine doses with poor countries over the next year. The group of seven nations are expected to begin sharing the vaccines in August.
Some of Africa's 1.3 billion people are at risk. They make up 18% of the world's population. However, the continent has received only 2% of all vaccine doses given worldwide. Some African countries have yet to vaccinate anyone. Zimbabwe has enforced new lockdown measures because of a sharp rise in cases and deaths in the country. It has over 15 million people, but has used just over a million of 1.7 million doses of vaccine. Experts blame the lack of vaccines in urban areas on the difficulties of organizing and administering vaccination efforts. Months ago, officials in Zimbabwe were urging people to get vaccinated, but many chose not to. Now, long lines form at health centers giving the vaccines. Many people are worried about winter and new forms of the virus. Dr. Machadiso Moeti is Africa Director of the World Health Organization. She said the increase in cases should push everyone to action. She explained that people must be tested and separated from others. Keeping records of people's movements, known as contact tracing, is another measure that must quickly increase, she added. She said recently that new corona cases in Africa have risen by nearly 30%.
In Zambia, a vaccination campaign has slowed. Officials report that the country is running out of oxygen for patients with breathing problems. Sick people whose cases are not severe are being turned away by hospitals in Lusaka, the capital. And Uganda is fighting a sharp rise in cases and is reporting different forms of the virus. Health officials told the Associated Press that people in their 20s and 30s are getting infected. Dr. Ian Clark founded a hospital in Uganda. He said that vaccine demand is growing among people who, at first, did not want to be vaccinated. But now, he added, they do not know when or from where they will get more vaccine doses. The World Health Organization, or WHO, said nearly 90% of African countries are set to miss the global target of vaccinating 10% of their people by September.
However, concerns about vaccination efforts are not limited to Africa. At the end of May, 600,000 people in Afghanistan had received at least one dose of the vaccine. That is less than 2% of the population of 36 million. China donated 700,000 doses of vaccine, which arrived recently. Within hours, people were fighting with each other to get to the front of the line, said Health Ministry spokesperson Dr. Ghulam Dastagir Naziri. And in Haiti, hospitals are turning away sick people. The country is waiting to receive its first vaccines. Supplies from the UN's COVAX program have been delayed. Haitian officials also worry that the doses cannot be kept at the required temperature for safe storage. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William McKinley. He took office in 1897 and was re-elected in 1900. He led the United States into the 20th century. One way to think of McKinley is as a transition president. In the 1800s, lawmakers were mostly concerned with how the country was growing in North America. But during McKinley's government, the U.S. looked beyond its borders. Congress declared war on Spain, the first time the U.S. had fought a European power since the War of 1812 against Britain. The U.S. also took control of overseas territories, annexed Hawaii, and tried to regulate the world's trade with China. Some historians say President McKinley himself wanted the U.S. to increase its international influence. Others argue that he was just answering the country's mood at the time. Either way, his presidency is often defined by the country's rise as an imperial power. McKinley was the sixth president to come from the state of Ohio. He was the seventh of eight children. Historians describe his childhood as loving and fun. His father owned a small iron factory. His mother raised her children to be honest and polite. McKinley was a hard-working student. He briefly attended Allegheny College in Pennsylvania, but he did not have the money to finish his education there. A few years after leaving that school, he volunteered for the Army on the side of the Union in the Civil War. He served under a man who would later become president himself, Rutherford B. Hayes. The two stayed close throughout their lives. After the war ended, McKinley studied law, became involved in Republican Party politics, married, and had two daughters. His wife, Ida, was an energetic, well-educated young woman from a wealthy family. For a while, she had worked in her father's bank. But Ida McKinley's health began to suffer. She was struck by seizures. Then her mother died. A few months later, her younger daughter died while still an infant. Ida McKinley clung to her older daughter, but the little girl soon developed a fever disease, and she died too. William and Ida McKinley were never the same. Ida McKinley remained sick her entire life. She spent most of her hours in a small rocking chair sewing. William McKinley paid great attention to her. He organized his schedule to spend time near her, even as his political success grew. In time, McKinley served in Congress and as the governor of Ohio. He was known as a likable person and a skilled politician. His Republican Party nominated him on the first ballot at their convention. A few months later, voters elected McKinley into office in a landslide. He became the country's 25th president. When McKinley took office, the U.S. was just coming out of a severe economic depression. His government quickly approved a high protective tariff to help struggling workers. In general, his administration also permitted the growth of big business. But most of McKinley's attention as president was devoted to foreign policy. The main issue was Cuba. At that time, Spain controlled the island. Cubans revolted, and Spanish forces used violence and detainments to crush the rebellion. In the U.S., many Americans denounced the events in Cuba. They wanted McKinley and his government to intervene. At first, President McKinley was unwilling. He tried to use diplomacy. He even ordered a U.S. ship into Spanish waters near Havana to show his continued support of Spain. But the ship, called the Maine, exploded. Americans believed the Spanish were responsible. Relations between the two countries worsened fast. Spain declared war. The U.S. Congress answered in kind. For 100 days, U.S. and Spanish forces fought in Cuba and other areas under Spanish control. The war quickly turned in the Americans' favor. When the Spanish-American War ended with the Treaty of Paris in 1898, the U.S. took control of Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines from Spain. Cuba was made independent. However, the U.S. continued to occupy the island for several more years. Not everyone approved of the actions of McKinley's government. Even some members of Congress warned against the U.S. becoming an imperial power. But a majority of voters approved of McKinley as a victorious commander-in-chief. They also noted that the U.S. economy was getting stronger. In 1900, McKinley won re-election. As it turned out, McKinley's second term in office was short. In September, only 6 months after his swearing in, the president was receiving visitors at a fair in the city of Buffalo, New York. One of the visitors in line was a 28-year-old man named Leon Czolgosz. His family was from Poland, but he lived in the city of Detroit, Michigan. He had worked in a factory, but at the time was unemployed. He supported the idea of anarchy, no government at all. When McKinley reached to shake the young man's hand, Czolgosz shot the president twice in the stomach. Although injured, McKinley spoke to his guards. He told them not to hurt the shooter, and he expressed concern about how his wife would feel when she learned he had been shot. Quickly, McKinley was taken to a hospital. Doctors predicted that he would survive. And for a few days, McKinley seemed to improve. But the wound became infected, and 8 days after the attack, McKinley died. The president's murderer did not say he was sorry for his act. He defended it, saying McKinley was an enemy of working people. Within a few weeks of the shooting, Czolgosz was tried, found guilty, and executed. Both the nation and the world mourned when McKinley died. He had been one of the country's most popular presidents in many years. He left behind the beginning of what some called an American empire. He also marked a change in the U.S. presidency. When he first took office in the 19th century, most presidents acted primarily as administrators. But President McKinley began to act in ways that are more like a modern president. He prepared remarks to give to the media. He traveled across the country speaking to voters. He used the power of his office to direct the armed forces. McKinley laid the groundwork, but he did not completely change the presidency. He left that to the even more famous man who followed him into the White House. After McKinley's death, his vice president, Theodore Roosevelt, took office and truly brought the country into modern times. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.